Okay, so again, we'll start again at the beginning of the Zayin Amud Beis. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Rabbi Yochanan said in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Miyom Shebora HaKadosh Baruch Hu Es HaOlam, from the time that Hashem created the world, Lahaya Adam Shekra'oi LaKadosh Baruch Hu Adon. Nobody called Hashem Adon, Master, until Avram came and called him Adon, Master. Shenemar, as it says in the pasuk, Vayomer Adonai Elohim Bama Eda Ki Iroshenu. Said Adon, he's the first one who used what we call the name Adnus. We have the Yud Kei Vav Kei name, and certainly the name of Hashem was used, and people related. So we're not saying that Avram was the first one to acknowledge Hashem as the master of the world. But up till then, they always used the name Yud Kei Vav Kei Hashem. Avram Avinu really was the one who innovated the use of the name Adnus. Now, what's the significance of that? So, basically what all the Mepharshim say, Rashba, the Marshal, the Maral, the Mabit, they all say that the connotation of the word Adoin, as opposed to just Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei denotes the origin of all existence. Hayah-Hayva the year. Is, was, and will be, which really means he made everything that was, made everything that is, made everything that will be. But
does the word itself mean something?
What? Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei?
Adoin means master. Yeah. Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei means something?
Well, it's the same letters as Yehaveh, which means he will make exist. Lehavot means to make something exist, to make something be. So he's the one who makes things be. He's the origin of all existence. Okay, everybody acknowledged that. Adonin has a bit of a different connotation. We know that there are two levels we have to relate to Hashem. There are two really aspects of what we have to believe in Hashem. Number one, he's the creator. Number two, he controls and runs all of this world. It's two different things. So everybody acknowledged Hashem as the creator, all the people of earlier times. Just the truth is that the original mistake of Avodah Zarah was, sure, Hashem is the origin of everything. He's the ultimate source of everything. But he's not involved in what's going on with us. This is where Avodah Zarah started from. Hashem is too great for that. Hashem put the world at the, well, the way they put it was, that's how we would put it today. But the way they put it was, he has forces running the world. There's the sun, there's the moon, there are their representatives. There are forces running the world. So, Adon denotes not just the origin of all of everything, but Adon denotes also the controller. Adon is the one who's involved now with all living beings. Hands on, exactly. Other than master denotes that he's involved. He's only a master if he has to, what to do with his subjects. So he's involved. That's what Adon denotes. Avraham Avinu was the one who came and was mechadish, that you can relate to Hashem on a relationship level. Not just that he's the origin, but that he's involved in each person's personal life in a hands-on way, exactly how you put it. In a hands-on way. That was Avraham Avinu's kiddush. Now the truth is, again, Avraham Avinu, this is not just to preclude the beliefs of the idolaters. There were great people in earlier times. There was Shem, there was Adam, there was Noach, Methuselah, Hanoch, a whole list of righteous names that we can give. But yet, that level that Avraham Avinu introduced of mamish interacting with Hashem on a regular basis, have a personal relationship with Hashem, give and take on a regular basis, that was Avraham Avinu's chiddush. That Avraham Avinu introduced. What's that? So we will either say, depending, there seems to be different, subtly different approaches on this, we will either say that Noach did not quite have that because he had certain nevuahs at certain times which were really relevant to the general world. Like, this is how Hashem wants to continue the world. Noach is going to represent the continuation of mankind. So Hashem gave him a nevuah. Let's keep in mind, Noach was not in touch with Hashem on a day-to-day basis. Pasha Snach, we see Hashem talking to him a few times. But actually,
years,
right? Yeah, right, something like that. Once every 600 years. He had a Nevoah before the Mabul. Fine.
at the end of the Mabul he was told to leave. Fine, that was basically it. Wasn't that in touch with Hashem on a day-to-day basis?
Avraham Avinu wasn't either, by the way.
Divorce were not a common thing. Avraham Avinu, throughout his lifetime, got a handful of nevuahs. We picture that Avraham Avinu was every day having conversations with Hashem. He was talking to Hashem on a regular basis, but Hashem wasn't talking to him on a daily basis. What's that? That is possible, but it's not necessarily so. But yet, Avraham Avinu, the first time, right? He had a whole give and take. Oh, how Hashem related to Hashem, and more so, Avraham Avinu related to Hashem in that way even when he wasn't getting a nevuah. He interacted with Hashem even when he wasn't, or he didn't depend on getting nevuah. That's how we're supposed to run our relationships with Hashem. So in answer to your question, it's possible that Noach, at the end of the day, still did relate to Hashem more in a, call it in a humble sense. Hashem got in touch with him when there was something pertaining to the continuation of mankind. Okay, fine. And he worshipped him in more of a distant way. More of a distant way. Whereas Avraham Avinu was the one who came and said, no, you can really get close with Hashem. Or we can say, others say that no, it doesn't mean certainly the great people of earlier times had this sort of relationship with Hashem as well. All it means is that it was forgotten and Avraham came and reinstated it. Well, whatever it is, the big point is that Avraham Avinu brought this Kiddush to the world. That yes, you can have a close, hands-on, intimate relationship with Hashem. He's involved. Adain, he's not just the Mehaveh, the one who brought everything into existence, and now he's aloof in his world up there, but he is intimately involved. The truth is, Rav Hirsch says, that's the term Adain, is from the word Eden. Eden is a base that supports other things. He says, when we're talking about a master in Torah terms, it doesn't mean a king, for example. It doesn't mean someone who just lives off, you know, lives off the his subjects, and he's the boss, and that's that. It's an Eden. He's the base. Everything leans on him. He supports everything. He supports his nation. In Hashem's case, he's the other, and he supports all of existence. It's not just that he's the boss and he tells us what to do. He's the base. He's the base. He's supporting us all. We translate it that way because we're not allowed to pronounce the name.
Even so, like the fact that we have that dichotomy, like every time that we say Hashem's name, we're sort of having the double.
That's true, because the truth is, you're supposed to bring both kavanas together. You're supposed to bring both kavanas together.
Right. Yeah,
and he's continuing to run it on and run each person on a personal basis, right?
So why do we say Ado instead of when we say Elohim?
What's that?
Why do we take Ado for the way that we say Yudivokte? We say Ado. Why don't we say Elohim? We say the last name.
Elohim denotes something else. The Shem Adnus is the most closely related to Yudivokte, even though it's a more limited way of expressing the concept of Yud Kei Vav Kei. Really, the truth is that actually what Avraham Avinu was being Mechadish was included in the term Yud Kei Vav Kei is that he's constantly running everything on a regular basis. Just we say Adnus when we only relate to that part. Really, Meikra Adin, whenever we say Adnus, it's really being said instead of Yud Kei Vav Kei. Alpi Halacha, really, we should have the Kavanah of Yud Kei Vav Kei every time we say the word Adnus. There are two kavanas. Yud Kei Vav Kei denotes Haya Hoyve V'Yeh. He is, he was, is, and will be. Which also includes he was the origin of everything, he is the origin of everything, and will be the origin of everything. And besides that, we say Adoin HaKoil. Both kavanas go together. Adoin HaKoil, Haya Hoyve V'Yeh. He's the Adoin of everything. He runs everything. But really, you're supposed to have both kavanas. The Goyim gives a heter that outside of Kriya Shema, it's enough to just have the Kavan of Adnus. He's the Adon HaKol. He runs everything. But in Kriya Shema, actually, when you say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, by those two Hashem, you're supposed to think, you're supposed to intend it all. Haya Hoy V'Yeh, and also Adon HaKol. Okay.
So this was Avraham Avinu's schus. Now Omar Rav, Av Daniel, loinene ela bishvil Avraham. Daniel, when he was davening for the restoration of the Beis Hamikdash, he was answered in the schus in the merit of Avraham. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, Ve'ato Shema Eloheinu El Tfilas Avdecho Ve'el Tachavuno. Now, listen, our God, to the prayers of your servant and to his supplications. Ve'er Ponecha Mikdoshcha Shameim, and shine your face upon your desolate temple. L'man Adonai, for the sake of Adnus. So again, he's talking to Hashem in the second person. He says, please shine your face upon your Mikdash again, for the sake of Adoy. Eleman Chami Boile, should have said, for your sake. Why is he saying for the sake of Adoy? Eleman Avrom Shikracha Adon. Rather, what he meant to say was, wasn't just saying for your sake. He's saying, Leman Adoy, he meant to say, in the schus, in the merit of that concept of Adoy, of Adnus, that Avraham Avinu introduced. That was the schus he was invoking to get Hashem to grant them success in rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash. So here really, it's very fitting. The Maharal says, what's the whole essence of Beis HaMikdash? The whole concept of Beis HaMikdash is our connection to Hashem. The Shara Shemaim, the Beis HaMikdash is the meeting place between heaven and earth. That's where heaven and earth connect. That is the place through which Hashem's relationship with us channels. So yes, the most fitting thing was that Daniel was coming and saying, this Adnus concept is what we're trying to do here in the Beis HaMikdash. We want it, and that's chus. So by the way, we note, the Rashba also adds, that it's not just that Avraham Avinu introduced this belief. Avraham Avinu was busy propagating it. He was running around advertising it. That also might have been a difference between him and the previous generations. Even if there were people in earlier generations who did relate to Hashem in this way, Avraham Avinu kra'oi Adon. Avraham Avinu called him Adon in the sense of spreading it all over the place, advertising it. He spent his life, that was basically his life's career, advertising the fact that yes, we should be involved with Hashem on a regular basis. So, yeah, that's why kra'oi Adon more than everybody who preceded him. So the Rashba adds that it's for that reason that Hashem demonstrated this through Avraham. What was Avraham coming to preclude? Don't think that Hashem is distant and that Lamaisa, the world runs basically according to the forces of the constellations, etc. Now, by the way, it's important to realize that the constellations are important causes. We think that it's all garbage. That's not so. The stars and the constellations are important factors and causes in many things that happen in this world. Pasuk says, Limshol Bayom Ubalayla, when Hashem created the stars and the moon, Limshol Bayom Ubalayla, to rule. The Ramban says that yes, many aspects of this world are channeled through them. Just the difference is, just one minute, the difference though is that the way they believe it is that these are independently operating forces that make their own decisions. Now we understand that no, if you pour something through a funnel, so it's the funnel bringing it to the cup, but is the funnel consciously involved in what's going on? The funnel have any control? No. It's a conduit. So yes, Hashem pours different things through different stars. And people saw that this star has this effect. They started attributing it to the star's decision. They started telling the star Yashikoya. So, yes, the stars do cause things. But what are they? They're the buttons. That's all they are. It's all Hashem.
It never shoots at all. They're not given any authority?
They're not given any authority. They have authority in the practical sense, meaning, the same as we'll say, that a machine, a tape recorder, if you push its button, anybody here remember what tape recorders are? You don't know what a tape recorder is. a CD. You push the button, now it has the authority to give off sound. Is that true? In the practical level, yeah. Right? It can give off sound better than you. What?
I think it's more like an antenna. Big antenna on top of
an antenna, right.
Beams
oh, so it has that power. It
right, has that power. It has that power, which maybe you could call it authority, but it's not a conscious authority. It's just Hashem channeling it through them. It depends on the one who turns on the CD. That's basically the idea. So Avraham Avinu came and he was preaching that. Rabbi Sai, forget about all of them. Those are just conduits. Worship the cause of it all. The one who's actually doing it actively all the time. So therefore, since Avraham Avinu was busy advertising this his whole life, Hashem demonstrated that through Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, according to the way the constellations were set up, couldn't have children. So Dabka through Avraham Avinu, Hashem came and showed, doesn't depend on all that. If you get close enough with me, you will have. So Avraham Avinu was the living example of everything he was preaching. He was Zeicher to be the living example. Hashem demonstrated the truth of Avraham Avinu's teachings through him, when he took Avraham Avinu and raised him above the constellations. What were you going to say?
I was going to say that you said that constellations have like some power of their own, because it says that when Hashem made them up, he took a star out of the tail of the crowd.
That's right. That's right. That's a good example of that. Hashem made the Mabul. In order to make the Mabul, he rearranged an aspect of the constellations, and that's what happened. I'll leave that for now. The Ramban deals with that. I'll leave that for now. Lean Nether, if you remind me, well, maybe I'll email you about it. Okay, I don't want to. We're going to get beyond our scope. Okay. By the way, you know, the Chofetz Chaim, right? There's such a hug of Hashem. If you make a point of advertising something on behalf of Hashem, He might reward your efforts by making you the example. Chofetz Chaim. What was the Chofetz Chaim's life's campaign? Well, one of his life's campaigns was Shmiras HaLashon. And what did he base it on? He based it on the pasuk that says, "Mi ha'ishe chofetz chayim oivyam im l'rostok," who desires life. In other words, the big selling point was Shmiras HaLashon is a schus for long life. So when the Chofetz Chaim turned 80, according to how the story goes, he advertised it in the papers. He advertised in the papers that he had turned 80. He lived until 93, by the way. When he turned 80, he advertised it in the papers that people should see that yes, the one who was always preaching about how Shmiras HaLashon brings you a long life is indeed meriting a long life. It wouldn't do if he would pass away at the age of 42. Right? He either have to say he didn't practice what he preached. So he made a point of advertising it, according to how the story goes. Same thing, he felt that it was a Kiddush Hashem. Let people see that the one who represented Shmiras HaLashon merited it. What's that? In those days, life expectancy was much shorter in those areas. 80 was a very long life in those days, and he lived till 93, which was extremely unusual in those areas. Fine, many of the other great sages of those times died more in like in the late 60s, early 70s. Okay, we'll move on. Rabbi Yochanan said, in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Minayin shein meratzin loy la'odam bish'as kasa. How do we know that you should not attempt to appease somebody when he's angry? Does this sound familiar? We learned this in Amud ago. 2 Amudim ago. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, Panay elecho v'ani choysilo. Let my wrath pass, and then I'll grant your request. Okay, everybody probably noted that we just learned that before. Why is Gemara repeating it here? So it's one of those puzzles, find the difference. The difference is who he's quoting. Before it was Rabbi Yochanan quoting it in the name of Rabbi Yossi. Now he's quoting it in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. He had two rabbis. He learned this from each of his rabbis separately, and therefore he was conveying it from each of them separately. Now, it's possible that if you actually knew the two rabbis, you might also understand each teaching in a different, from a different perspective. Each one probably had his line of philosophy, might have different insight coming from each one. I don't know. Whatever it is, he was quoting it in the name of each Rebbe independently, since he heard it from each Rebbe independently. Okay. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Miyom Shebora Kadosh Baruch Hu Esolamoi. From the day that Hashem created His world, Lahaya Adam Shehoidala Kadosh Baruch. This is surprising. There was nobody who thanked Hashem. Until Leah came along and thanked him. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, when Yehuda was born, Hapa'am oides Hashem. Now I will thank Hashem. That's very surprising. Avram Avinu. Now we're talking about Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. We already passed some of the all stars. Leah was the first one to introduce this concept. Surprising. But first, let's just see a Rashi together, just to see exactly what it was. How come all of a sudden by Yehuda she woke up to thank Hashem more than by the other Shvatim? She already had three children before him. So let's just see this Rashi. The Rashi at the top of the Yomud, the top line, second Rashi. Hapam oides Hashem. This time I will thank Hashem. Why now? So Rashi says, Lefisheruasa beruach hakodesh. She saw through Ruach HaKodesh. Everybody's with me? She saw through Ruach HaKodesh. Okay? Top of the page. Top Rashi on the page. Top line of Rashi. Ruach of Ruach HaKodesh. She saw through Ruach HaKodesh. Don't have it? Zayin Amud Beis. Top line. She saw through Ruach HaKodesh She Yaakov Ma'amid Shnei Maso Shvatim. That Yaakov is destined to have 12 shvatim. Now, how many wives did he have? Veloy arba noshim. He had 4 wives. So, what's the equation? 12 shvatim, 4 wives, 3 per wife. Kivan sheyolda ben Revi, when she had her 4th son, hoides al chelka. Now, she was overwhelmed with gratitude. She thanked for her lot. Because now she saw that she was getting more than was coming to her. That was why by Yehuda she thanked more than by the previous ones, more than by Reuben, Shimon, Levi. So the Pnei Yeshua gives a beautiful insight into what's actually going on here. There's no question that Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak and Yaakov, they all knew how to thank Hashem also. In fact, from a Mefarshim note, who said, we say on Leil Shabbos, Toiv lehoidos l'Hashem. Who said that? Adam Arishon. So there were people being moided to Hashem before Leah too. The Pnei Yeshua says something beautiful. He says as follows. He says, I'll give an example. Let's say you get a new job. You show up in the office and the boss sits you down at the desk and shows you a computer. You sit down at the desk. You say, wow, gee, boss, you gave me such a comfortable chair. And you're giving me a computer, too. I'm overwhelmed with gratitude. Is that in place? It's a little bit presumptuous. The boss will say, 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute. I hope you understand what is going on here. This is not for you to sink into the comfortable chair and stop playing computer games. I gave you a comfortable chair and a computer, and I get to work. The computer is mine. It's for my purposes. I'm not doing you any favors. This is business. So, Yeshua said that up until Leah's time, the feeling may have been, there's no room to thank Hashem on a personal level. Anything that you get from Hashem is b'mishpat, being given for a specific mission, whatever it is, take it and get to work. Don't thank the boss with tears in your eyes if he gives you something to work with, because then he might get nervous. You don't understand your job, right? Leah, she was maybe from a certain perspective of innocence, just came and thanked Hashem. You gave me something for free. She was mechadish to the world that there's such a concept. Just thanking Hashem for giving you something just because He wanted you to have something good. Right. Right. On the contrary, she saw now that it wasn't meant to be three children per wife, but that exactly meant that she was meant to get more than the other wives. That itself was what was bringing out these feelings of gratitude. She was like, you know, why am I deserving to get more than anybody else? So the Rashba says, that's what Rashi means. When she had her first three children, she figured, okay, we're all partners in producing the Am Hashem. Each one's going to have three children. All of a sudden, when she got the fourth, which was completely not expected, that wasn't really part of the contract, right? The way she saw it. All of a sudden, she suddenly saw grace from Hashem on her. She's being graced in a special way. She gave a personal thank you. Hashem, you just gave me something good, just in order for me to have something good. That's what she was mechadish. The truth is that this is something that we should take home, while at the same time, the sensitivity that the Pnei Shoah is expressing here is true. For example, the Magen Avraham says, this is Halacha Lamaisa, a person should never say the words, even though he's supposed to feel this, a person should never say to Hashem, you gave me this even though I don't deserve it. Don't say those words, the Magen Avraham says. Those are dangerous words to say. You can invoke problems by saying that. Don't say I don't deserve it. Feel overwhelmed, feel I don't deserve it, but don't say it, don't articulate that. I mean, there's something to it. Not coming and presumptuously saying, Hashem, you're just giving me things for free. But at the end of the day, Leah is showing us that there definitely is such a thing. We should feel it, and we should give heartfelt thanks, not just in the business sense, but in the personal sense. Okay.
Could the qualify it with the difference in the thank you that we should use the daily use? The lesson is given here.
What are you asking? I'm not...
In other words, the Gemara is teaching us a lesson of a new level of thank you that never existed before. Is this something that only Leah could do, or something that we could offer?
No, this is definitely something that we could do. The Gemara is bringing this in to show that this was a chiddush that she brought to the world. She brought this to the world. She published it.
But she understood, I understand what they're saying, is that this level of hodah occurs only when you get a feeling for what your chelik is, something Ramallah meant.
So Reuven is saying, well, maybe this applies to someone like Leah, who saw that she was getting more than she should be getting. The truth is that the answer to this is that it works the other way around, works backwards. When you really sense that you got something that you were undeserving of, where should you go from that? To suddenly start realizing that all the things that you did feel are natural, you're really undeserving of also. This is one of the most fundamental principles that the Kovas Alvavas hammers home all the time. You suddenly get something that you are overwhelmed with, now step back for a minute and say, actually, what I got before that was coming to me. You have to suddenly start working backwards and saying, all the things that I, up till now, did take for granted, really, also, there's no reason why Hashem should have given them to me. Hashem gave them to me. He's gracing me. Now here also, I just want to note that it's quite likely, like we said earlier about Avram, that Avram Avinu felt this, and that others felt this, and they also expressed it to Hashem. But she was the one who really publicized it in such a way by perpetuating it in the name of a child. Right? She etched it in history. But the truth is that yes, we're supposed to learn the lesson the contrary. Leah, when she had her fourth child, suddenly made her realize, actually those first three are gifts also. So you should be able to work backwards and note the gift in everything. The Mepharshim do add that, yes. Yes. Yehudim as people are Maidat Hashem, yes. Okay. We'll move on. Now once we're on the subject of Shvatim and their names, Reuven. Now we'll back up a little bit. Yehuda was number four. Let's back up to number one. Amar Rabbi Elazar. What does the name Reuven denote? Amar Leah. Reu ma ben bini levenchami. Look at the difference between my son and my father-in-law's son. Who is her father-in-law's son? Esav. Look at the difference between my son and my brother-in-law. That's... Good point. Let's see what the Mepharshim will have to say on that. Let's see. De'ilu ben Chami, but she was making a comparison based on reality. She said, look at the difference between Reuben and Esav. De'ilu ben Chami, because look at my brother-in-law. Afalgav, what did Reuben and Esav have in common? They both lost the Bechairah. They both lost the firstborn rights. Now, how did each one react? Ben Chami, my brother-in-law, afalgav demidate zavne lebcheruse, even though he willingly sold his Bechairah, right? It was completely of his own will. Diksiv, as it says in the Pasuk, Vainkur is Bechairah Yaakov. He sold his Bechairah to Yaakov. Chazum Aksivpe. Look what it says afterwards. Vayistoim Esav is Yaakov. Esav hated Yaakov. Uksiv. And it says, Vayoyna. He said, Achikora Shmo Yaakov. They have appropriately called his name Yaakov, which is as in the one who comes last. Vayakveni zepamayim. He got the last word against me twice. So look how Esav is all full of tainus, bitter, resentful for something that he did of his own accord. That's what we call, in modern terms, a sore loser. It's worse than a sore loser. A person made a deal, and then afterwards, I have this with the, you know, you have this with the kids. One kid trades a treat with the other kid, eats the treat that they got, and then they go back demanding with the treat that they gave the other kid. Right? So, Me'ilu b'ni, so that was Esav. He sold it willingly, afterwards he has kindness. Me'ilu b'ni, look at my son. Afal gavda al kolchei shakle Yosef l'b'cheru seminei. Yosef took the b'cheru from him against his will. Iksiv, as it says in the Pasuk, u'b'chalilo yitzuei aviv, when he desecrated the couch of his father, his b'chayah was granted to the family of Yosef. Yet he didn't envy him. Diksiv says in the pasuk exactly the opposite. Reuven heard and he saved them. He saved Yosef from their hands. Right. But there would certainly be room for resentment there. And when you see Yosef afterwards didn't come running to Reuven and say, take the double portion back. Right?
Against Hashem so much. I mean, it's easier to be upset against Yaakov.
That's true on the theoretical level. Practically, though, when you see it in front of your eyes, and now he's walking around with all your rights, the resentment will be there. Unless you work on it, which Reuven did. But look at Cain, right? So, practically, it is that you see him going around with everything he was supposed to have. That's the whole concept of envy. What is envy? Somebody else has something. Hashem gave it to him. You see it opposite your eyes, it eats you up. But Matisyahu Solomon said that it's precisely that. What's going on in the subconscious when a person envies somebody else? He says it goes from that could have been mine. Then, as he focuses on it more, it turns into, that should have been mine. And then as he focuses on it more, it turns into, really, it is mine. He just took it. Right? So this is the epitome. Should have been his. Could have been his. Should have been his. Okay. So, you know, there's a couple of points to make here. First of all, the Gemara is saying that that's why she called Reuven Reuven. Does that mean that she was prophesying what was going to happen? What's that? Is that what that means? But there's a bigger problem, which all the Mepharshim point out. The Pasuk says why she called Reuven Reuven. Ra'a Hashem ba'ani. Hashem saw my affliction. So what's the Gemara coming and saying here? So, and now, Stan is asking another question. Why is she, yeah, just a second. Why is she comparing her son to Esav? Maybe she should compare her son to Esav's son. What were you going to say?
Maybe Hashem made her whole when really it had a deeper meaning.
Oh, so basically, that's what the Mefarshim say. The Mefarshim say that no, she intended one thing. She intended what she intended. But there was Ruach HaKodesh in the name. As we're going to see soon, names actually have a certain portent in them. That they hold deeper meaning for what is going to be going on with this person later in life that Hashem manipulates. But it's a little more than that. The Ben Ish Chai says a little more than that. The Ben Ish Chai says that no, she actually meant Ru'uma ben Bini leben Chan. She actually did mean to say, look at the difference between my son and Esau. Now, however, she wasn't aware of what was going to happen later. These things weren't predestined. All she was saying was, I'm going to show that this son is not the same as Esau. That's all she meant. She meant, this boy, watch. Everyone will see. Re'u. Everyone look, he's not going to be the same as Esau. That's what she was saying. And as it developed, it was demonstrated in this way, manifested in this way. And here we come to the answer of your question. The Mefarshim say that she was itching to show a contrast between her children and Esav. Why? Why not difference between her children and Nimrod? Let's remember what Chazal tell us. What's that? Oh, why not her children and Esav's children? So, Chazal tell us that everybody was, according to talk, everybody was saying that Leah was going to marry Esav. That she was really, really a fitting shidduch for Esav. Yaakov ended up marrying her. But, in a way, he was kind of duped. Right? And it's quite possible that he felt the whole time that, Shkoyach, I got Esav's shidduch. You know, what kind of shidduch is that? And therefore, the truth is, she wasn't fit for Esav. She was fit for Yaakov. In certain ways, she was actually Yaakov's prime wife. In certain ways. Other ways, we know that Rachel was. And therefore, she was intent on showing through her children that you'll see through my children that I'm really more fitting for Yaakov than for Esau. They're going to be much more similar to Yaakov than to Esau. That's what she was bringing out here. What's that? The mother has at least equal, if not more, influence. That's why, for example, Chazal say, when you marry, you want to know what your kids are going to be like? Before you marry a woman, check her brothers. They're going to be more like her brothers than like you. Because the mother has equal, if not more, influence on how the children are going to be shaped. Now, that doesn't have to be an ironclad rule. But we're saying those are the stats. That's generally how it's assumed to be.
Let's say you'll know how the kids would turn out if they were married to Esau.
What's that?
You don't know how her kids would have been had he...
Yes, but at the end of the day, she was the one, she was the main one. Yaakov, especially in general, that's how it was in earlier times, that the father was more of a higher level influence, while it was the mother who was putting in on the daily level, actually doing all the work, doing the real raising. So that's why, yes, her children's development would very much reflect her. So actually, that's how some of the Mefarshim say. Who is it that says this? I forgot who says this. Up to Yeshua. What's that? Why wasn't Rivka more of an influence on Esau? Well, the question is, that's a question however you slice it. Because whichever parent affects the children, it's a kasha. Esau wasn't like Yitzchak or like Rivka. Right? So that's, yeah, there are going to be children who are going to go in a different direction. But in a general way, we're saying in a general way, the mother will have more fingerprints on the children than the father, more directly. Well, note though, that doesn't knock the father out of the picture. The father will often influence the influence that the mother will have on the children. It's your job to make your wife into what she should be. She'll make the kids into what they need to be. But often your influence on your children will be more channeled through your wife. So now, the Pnei Yeshua says that that's actually how the two, what the Pasuk says that she said, actually comes together with what the Gemara is saying here. What she said? She'll say, Hashem saw my affliction, now my husband will love me. Pnei Yeshua says what she was saying was, she was saying, my husband up to now is relating to me with certain reservations because he views me as Esav's shidduch. Right? But, and Hashem saw my affliction. therefore he granted me this son. And now my husband will start liking me. Why? Because Reuma ben Gmila ben Chami. Because I'm going to prove myself by showing the difference between my son and Esau. By showing through my son that I am more fitting for Yaakov than for Esau. That's what she was saying. I don't know, before I should make it a little more technical, they say that actually we infer from the pasuk that Leah had more than one intent when she named him what she named him. Because, first of all, the pasuk says, this is the Vilna Gaon says, the Gaon says, that by all the other Shvatim, first it says the reason and then the name. It says, Shama Hashem Kisnua Anoichi, therefore she called him Shimon. Hapam Yilaveh Ishiyeh Lai, therefore she called him Levi. Hapam Oides Hashem, therefore she called him Yehuda. But by Reuven it says the name first. She called him Reuven, and then afterwards it gives the reason. So the Gaon says that that implies that Reuven was already Reuven even before that second reason. There were two reasons. Well, the Ben Ish Chai notes that it says ki twice in the puzzle. Because. So there was more than one reason. You know what? I'll say, you're right. And other Mepharshim give this Mahalach notwithstanding. This is a classic thing. You're right. According to what you're saying, and there is room to say that, no, this Vark that I just said is not so appropriate. It's clear. Leah's Madrega was clear enough. I'll grant that. Nevertheless, these Mepharshim say what they say. We'll call it another Mahalach. But if we want, we can come back and say that we all have to realize that at the end of the day, Esau also wasn't exactly the Esau we pictured. Esau, in our generation, would be quite a respected personality. And when you're talking about the standards of the great house, the Yitzchak Avinu, of the Avos, Esau didn't make the grade. But Esau was, in our terms, Esau was quite a personality. It's all relative. Everything, almost everything from Tanakh has to be taken relatively.
Where would he be today?
It's really hard to answer that question exactly what level will give him. But that is stressed by many authorities that Esau and our... The problems with Esau were more subtle than we tend to think they are. An example. Esau was a murderer, Chazal tell us. Who did he kill?
Nimrod.
Did a service to humanity. Would anybody write off the guy who hung Eichmann as a killer? Say they did a service to humanity by killing Nimrod. Things are not as simple as they're made out to be often. Okay. Was that? That's right. His madrigas and kibbutz avim were unmatchable, right? Yeah. What? Yeah. Okay. Now, once we're on the subject of names, Rus. We go on to another name, Rus. My Rus. What's the significance of the name Rus? Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Shezachsa. She merited the Yatsa Mimeno David, Sherivola Kadosh Baruch Hu Veshiros Hashbachos. She was Zoicha. That she, from her came David, who satiated Rus is from the term Rivoya in Lira voice. Koisi Rivoya. To satiate. She had David who satiated Hashem, so to speak, with his Shirois Hashbachos, with his songs and praises. Okay? So here we keep seeing that the name of a person can actually be a portent of things to come in their life. Now, Minolam the Shma Garin. So the Gemara says this is a chiddush. We have to take a step back and say, who said that name is actually a factor in determining a person's achievements, a person's nature, a person's accomplishments? Who said that name is a factor in a person's future? Omar Abi Eliezer. Abi Eliezer said, yes, it is. The Omar Krof. Pasuk says, Lechu chazum if alois Hashem. Go and see the works of Hashem. Asher Som Shamlois Ba'aretz, who wreaks havoc in the land. This is a pasuk in Tehillim referring to some of the big events that Hashem does. The Pashto Pshat, it's talking about when Hashem makes tsunamis, earthquakes, etc. But Al Tikri Shamlois, do not read havoc, Elos Shemlois. Rather read names. Go and look at the works of Hashem who puts names in the land. Meaning, yes, through the names you already see an indication of things that are going to come. And therefore the Gemara is going here and saying retroactively, when we see things happen, oh, we can go back and read it into the name. So here I want to note that there are two levels to this. There's what we'll call the more spiritual level, and what we'll call the more practical spiritual level. First of all, what is a name? Today, we give names out of a book. We don't originate names. You have to realize that in earlier times, every name was an original. Every name was an original. Every name expressed what the parents were feeling at that time, or the way they viewed the birth of this child. They didn't name people after people. Today we come to a situation, they didn't name people after flowers, but they named people based on the significance of this child's birth, or of different feelings that were connected to this child's birth. Right, look at the names, the Tanakh names. Elitzur ben Shdeyur, we'll just pick a name out of a hat. Elitzur ben Shdeyur. My God is my rock. Ben Shdeyur. Shakai Ur. Shakai is my light. These are two different names. These are names that were given by the parents on inspiration when their children were born. So actually what a name represents is the hopes, the dreams that the parent has for this child. When Leah named her child Reuven, because she said Reuven ma ben bni le ben chami, she was actually expressing an ambition or a drive that she had, right? She was going to make out of this person someone who anybody will be able to say, whoa, look at the difference between him and Esau. And therefore, it's not surprising that that is how he turned out. When the mother is declaring at the outset, this child for me represents the difference between Esau and between what we want, yes, that's how he turned out. Often, what the parents imbue in the child, right, the vision that they have for the child, is going to go a long way in determining where the child is going to go in life. That's why, for example, Chaim Brisker says, right, the Chazal say, that, I'll give a different example. Rav Moshe Feinstein said, it's an interesting kasha. Said, there's an interesting din. The din in Shulchan Aruch. Din in Shulchan Aruch, it's good to avoid, even though it's not really Asr al-Pi din, one should avoid giving his child to a non-Jewish nursemaid, a wet nurse. Avoid having your child nurse from a non-Jew, from a non-Jewish woman. Why? This week's parasha, right? Moshe wouldn't nurse from a non-Jewish woman. So you see that it's not such a good thing. That's an halacha, something to be avoided. So Moshe Feinstein asked the question. Moshe Feinstein asked, Chazal, tell us why Moshe wouldn't nurse from a non-Jewish woman. Pesha osid lidaber im ha-shechina, a mouth that's destined to speak with the Shechina can't nurse from a non-Jewish woman. So Moshe said, so the Gemara is telling us that that was something that had to do with the special level of Moshe Rabbeinu. He's going to be a prophet. He's going to converse with Hashem. How do we come? What? Yeah, no, but he was saying more than that. It's on a Nevuah level. On a Nevuah level. So how can we come and make a general rule out of that nobody should do it? That's for Nevi'im. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. He's also Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein said that this halacha is actually coming to teach us a halacha and how parents should view their children. Every parent should view his children. He's saying this should be the natural state in Klal Yisrael as a pesha osid ledaber im hashchina. I am raising a Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm raising a child for whom there are no ceilings spiritually. We're going for the maximum. This child I'm going to make into a Navi. You have to realize this. It's possible, right? Right now we don't have Nevuah, but it could be any day. You want your child to be in as perfect a state as possible to be able to receive Nevuah. That's the approach. And therefore, yes, when a mother comes and at the time of her child's birth, she's expressing her drive, Reul Na Ben Bni the Ben Chami, it's only natural that later in his life, we will see those stark differences between him and Esau. Rabbi Yaakov is asking, why did that change? It changed at a marked point in history. Chazal note, ready note that already in the time of the Tanaim they were starting to name after ancestors instead of on inspiration, right? You already note that in the time of Chazal there were non-original names, right? There was Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, then there was Reb Gamliel, then Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. You see the names started being recycled. But I'll say it was a very marked time in history when they started recycling names, if we'll use that term. Machloik is exactly why it happened. Oh, Shukoyah. Machloik is exactly why it happened. But during the time of Chazal, they switched the trend from naming on inspiration to naming after ancestors. Because naming on inspiration required a level of inspiration, required a level of Ruach HaKodesh. Which is, by the way, is an amazing thing to note. That means that the multitudes of Klal Yisrael, for all those generations, were working with real Ruach HaKodesh, that the Tanaim already felt that they didn't have. Right, say that even today. But yet not to the level, still not to the level that we can rely on ourselves to come up with a good name for a child. Therefore today, we draw on the inspiration that our ancestors have, we name after ancestors. That's why we work it that way nowadays. That's one. There's another opinion that says something a little more technical. Since we were worried about, as the Golus was getting more complicated, and we were worried that Yichus would be lost, we tried to maintain our family lineage just by naming after, keeping the names of the ancestors in the family. That's a little more technical. But generally, we'll say that the approach is that you needed a certain level of Ruach HaKodesh in order to really be able to take upon your shoulders to confer upon your kid the name that he's going to carry through life that's going to affect him. See what the significance of the name is. You have to realize, nowadays, we really need to hook on to the good names, right? People come up with these crazy original names based on all kinds of funny, I don't know. Traditional names is a very good idea. Now, the Sefer Hasidim says that it's even a little bit more than that. He says that names somehow actually contain a certain effect on the child, something, call it supernatural. For example, that's where the concept comes of not naming. I know this famous concept of not naming after someone who died young, someone who died unnaturally. What's that? Do you have a name added? Oh, there you go. You changed the name. Your father knew what he was doing. You can rely on him. So, why is that? He says because a name will often contain a certain property. And that's why, when you're naming your child, you should try to latch him onto a name that worked well. Name him for a person that worked well. Name him for a person who basically represents what you hope for your child. Right? These are very important principles to keep in mind. Okay. We'll move on. Actually, we'll move on Thursday, Beis Hashem. Okay.